Welcome to Just a Minute. My name is Nicholas Parsons, and as the minute waltz fades away, once more it's my pleasure to welcome our many listeners in this country and, of course, around the world, but also to welcome to the programme four exciting and talented personalities who are going to speak with humour and eloquence and style and wit on a subject that I give them. They will try and do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviation. And those four intrepid players of this game are seated on my right, Paul Merton and Clement Freud, and seated on my left, Tony Hawkes and Giles Brandreth. Will you please welcome all four of them? As usual, I'm going to ask them to speak on a subject that I give them, and they will try and do that without hesitation, repetition, or deviating. And beside me sits Janet Staplehurst. She's going to help me with the score. She'll blow a whistle when the 60 seconds have elapsed. And this particular edition of Just a Minute is coming from the Northcote Theatre in the delightful city of Exeter. And we have... and we have a delightful Devonian audience here. Some of them have come from way outside the boundaries of this county, but they're all eager to get the show going, so we'll begin with Paul Merton. Oh, Paul, a nice topical subject. Grockles. You'll have to explain why it's topical, but talk on the subject, 60 seconds, starting now.
Well, as I understand it, it's a term for tourists. Basically, everybody that's not in this theatre is a grockle, as it goes. It seems to me, is it a term of abuse, or is it perhaps something meant kinder? I don't know.
Giles, you challenged.
Hesitation. Mm.
There was a hesitation. Yes, he wasn't sure. Yeah. So, Giles, you have a correct challenge. You get a point for that, of course. And there are 48 seconds available. Tell us something about grockles in this game, starting now.
Do you recall the lawyer who couldn't tell the difference between arson and incest and set fire to his sister? Well, I have a cousin who couldn't tell the difference between a grockelspiel...
Tony, you've challenged.
Repetition of difference.
Mm. Oh...
Ooh. Yes.
Razor sharp.
Tony, correct challenge. 41 seconds available. Grockles starting now.
We, the performers, are grockles here this evening, not born and raised in Exeter, as we perhaps should have been. Such a fine place it is, too. Always good to grockle.
Paul, challenge.
I'm sorry, it would have been awfully inconvenient for me to be born in Exeter, because my mother's never been to Exeter. She's never been here. She'd like to come, but she's never been.
So what is your challenge?
Well, it's deviation. It would not be easier for me to have been born in Exeter, is what Tony was saying. What do you think it would have been?
Well, it would have been if your mother was here.
Yeah, but she wasn't. That's my point, you see.
I think it's a very semantic point. I don't know whether how to judge on that. I think I have to give the benefit of the doubt to Tony, because he was only making a supposition on the basis that none of us come from this part of the world, so it would be more difficult for us to have come here. So you have the benefit, Tony. Keep
Thank
the subject.
You very much. I'm
a point
thrilled.
For that. And 31 seconds, grockles starting now.
I'm not a grockle myself, so I cannot judge the feelings you must feel when someone comes in, like me, and starts wandering around Newton Abbott and saying, "This is ghastly." But that is not... touched a bit of a nerve, I see. Little bit of research, always chat...
Clement has challenged.
Repetition of bit.
Yes, there was too much of a bit before. Oh, they're sharp in the audience too. You reminded them that it was a repetition. And Clement, we're going to hear from everybody in the first round on the subject of grockles. 10 seconds available, Clement, starting now.
In Widdicombe Fair, Peter Brewer, Jan Stewart... Uncle Tom Godby, they were all grockles. The one thing they had in common was the grockolinity.
Whoever is speaking when the whistle goes in this game gains an extra point. It was Clement Freud. He has two, so is Tony Hawkes. Giles has got one. Paul Merton's yet to score. But Tony, you take the next round. The best way to spend St. Valentine's Day. Oh, that nice. Tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
The best way to spend Valentine's Day is to book a romantic restaurant, candle-lit, perhaps with a violinist playing, but not do what I did last year and do it when you're single. It's fantastically embarrassing to sit there and view all the other couples kissing and cuddling whilst you read the Evening Standard.
A Giles challenged.
Deviation. There couldn't be other couples, given that he's there on his own.
That's very shrewd and, grammatically, technically correct. Sir.
I mean, in an English class, that's a fantastic challenge. On an entertainment programme, it's a bit disappointing.
No, Giles, you're perfectly correct. A very interesting and clever challenge. So, you get the point, you get the subject, you have 40 seconds, the best way to spend St. Valentine's Day, starting now.
On the 14th of February, 1984, in a television studio run by a breakfast station called TVAM, I attempted the longest ever screen kiss with the lovely Anne Diamond. This osculatory marathon was brought to me, I noticed, by a wonderful film starring Regis Toomey and Jane Wyman, in which they puckered up...
Tony, you challenge.
I want to hear about Valentine's Day.
I think he was associating kissing, which is love and affection.
He hadn't even mentioned Valentine's Day.
Yes, he did. He said that was the beginning on Valentine's Day.
I made a mistake.
He was snogging, what's her name?
I apologise.
And so, Giles, an incorrect challenge, a point to you, 23 seconds, the best way to spend St. Valentine's Day starting now.
This was a memorable St. Valentine's Day, because just as we were achieving our moment of apotheosis, we were interrupted by live coverage of President Brezhnev's funeral, which unfortunately was taking place in Moscow at the time.
Clement challenge.
You can't have live coverage of a funeral.
The coverage... The coverage was live, and indeed we went on to discuss the whole question of the kiss of life and whether it was appropriate under the circumstances.
I think you're trying to justify yourself. As the way you got him on other couples, I think Clement's entitled to have that one on the line.
Are we to assume that the TV director made the decision that you kissing Anne Diamond wasn't as exciting as Leonard Brezhnev's funeral? And so cut to Moscow as soon as they could?
Well, I could imagine that could happen, but anyway, so... Clement, you have a correct challenge. You have 12 seconds. The best way to spend St. Valentine's Day starting now.
Make up a poem. Susie hates me.
A poor challenge.
Was there a hesitation there?
There was a hesitation.
Where?
Yes.
I'm sorry, is that the local dialect? What's that? What's going on over here? It's not pantomime, you know.
I think they were endorsing your challenge.
Were they?
Yes. So you have 10 like seconds on the best way to spend St. Valentine's Day, starting now.
Standing...
Hesitation.
I will give you a bonus point for cheek and for the fact the audience applauded you, but it was utterly incorrect. So Paul has another point as well for an interruption and 9 seconds on the best way to spend St. Valentine's Day, Paul, starting now.
Tony Curtis and Jack Lemmon in Some Like It Hot begin that movie as jazz musicians, but when they witness a murder committed on St. Valentine's Day...
At the end of that round, Paul Merton was speaking as a whistle went. He's now equal in second place with Giles Brandreth. They're 1 point behind our leader, Clement Freud, and Tony is just behind them. And Giles, we'd like you to take the next round. I don't know why we'd like you to take it, because the subject is plastic surgery. And from my knowledge, you haven't had any, but you can talk on it starting now.
This morning I got up and wandered into the bathroom, potted up to the mirror, looked into it and thought, yes, rather tasty, attractive in its own way. Then, unfortunately, I popped in my contact lenses and suddenly a late middle-aged man appeared. And I thought, my wife is right after all. And if she concedes that she will start shaving her legs, I will indeed begin on the operations that are required. Plastic surgery is necessary. I'm going to commence with the neck. At the moment, I'm just using sellotape to keep the skin pulled back. And then when I've triumphed there, I'm going to move lower down, because unfortunately my...
Paul challenge.
Move lower down?
Lower down.
Oh, yes. Because the way my body hangs down in pleats, it's a matter of flooring and flooring.
You enjoyed your attempt to justify it, Giles, but it was incorrect. It was deviation from English as we understand it. I think that's the only thing to say. 25 seconds, Paul. Plastic surgery starting now.
You wouldn't believe it, but there's two members of this panel here tonight who have had plastic surgery. I wonder if you can guess who they are.
Tony challenge.
He seems to have left a big gap for them to guess it.
Yeah. I was hoping you might jot it down.
Yeah. So I think we call that possibly hesitation.
Oh, yeah.
It was hesitation because nobody's going to guess and because I don't think anybody... Well, it's not me, I can tell you. You're all looking at me because I'm the oldest. 16 seconds. Plastic surgery with you, Tony, starting now.
It's difficult to believe, but I used to be incredibly ugly. But I went...
Just challenged.
It's impossible to believe.
It is.
So that's deviation. Yes, I don't think. You're a very handsome fellow. I don't think you were ever incredibly ugly.
But I was going to tell the story of this brilliant plastic surgeon.
I know you were, but you said you were once incredibly young, ugly, and I don't believe that. So, well, Charles, I consider that to be a correct challenge.
That's the most magnificently charming way to turn down my appeal.
It is, but it's
you're
true.
You're being so nice.
I have to be accurate.
I have to accept your unreasonableness because it's so nice.
It's a pity, because I know you are being modest. 11 seconds with you, Giles, on plastic surgery starting now.
Jordan is a personal friend of mine. I am not speaking of the river or the country, but of Katie Price, a gorgeous creature who has had a nip here and the odd little bit of suction there. She's had them enlarged...
Giles Brandery is speaking as the whistle went gay. That extra point, he's moved forward. He's one ahead of Clement Freud and Paul Merton equal, and then Tony Hawks. It's all very close. And Clement, we'd like you to take the next round. The subject is having a knees up. Tell us something about that subject in this game, starting now.
The words of the song, I seem to recall, are knees up, Mother Brown, knees up, MB, knees up, don't get the breeze up, knees up. And the same woman who came earlier in the verse.
Paul has challenged. I never heard the buzzer go, but your light's come on, Paul. What's that?
I didn't
challenge. You didn't press it.
I'd like a point.
Well, you weren't interrupted, even if it was by me, and the audience clapped, so we give you the bonus point, Clement. And you have... He loves his bonus point. 45 seconds still, having a knees up, starting now.
I would like to make an official statement. On the fifth...
A Jars challenge.
I think there was a pause before the official statement.
He made his announcement of the official statement and then waited.
I thought it was a dramatic pause in there.
It was a dramatic pause.
Because I wanted to hear what the statement was going to be.
But if in just a minute we wait for dramatic pauses, we'd never get on with the show.
No, that's true.
And also, he would inhibit...
I might as well go.
You can keep going with style and aplomb, Clement. You don't have to have the benefit of the doubt on those sort of things. 40 seconds with you, Giles, having a knees up, starting now.
When I was a Member of Parliament, I was invited to an old people's home for a knees up. This was something of a misnomer, because all I could see was the clatter of Zimmer frames as I came in, and every single one of the knees was firmly placed where they should be, not actually up, but down.
Clement, challenge.
Deviation.
Why?
You can't see the clatter of Zimmer frames.
Actually, Clement, I don't think you're right. You do hear the clatter, but you can observe it.
I'm afraid these people were severely hard of hearing. I felt it would be discourteous to suggest one could hear it.
I think, actually, Giles, to be fair to Clement, I gave it to you on other couples earlier on, which was a grammatical inaccuracy of which Tony indulged in. So, Clement, we give you the benefit of the doubt there and say, yes, having an ease up with you now, 27 seconds, starting now.
I shall no longer make a personal statement.
Tony challenged. Yes.
Can you be challenged for being in a bit of a sulk?
I think he was going for another laugh. Yeah. It shouldn't come.
I think a hesitation, though.
I want to hear what his personal statement is. One minute we're going to hear it, then we're not going to hear it. It's driving me mad. Right.
We'll hear it at the end of the round. So, okay. 23 seconds with you, Tony, having your knees up, starting now.
After these recordings, we don't go straight home to bed. We panellists, we have a knees up back at the hotel. What an evening it is. We don't let each other repeat, deviate, or do anything like that. We've got buzzers fitted up at the table by the placemats. It's so exciting. We bicker till four.
Paul challenge.
What is he talking about? He's living in some fantasy showbiz land there.
You haven't been invited.
Oh, haven't I? I've just been told to get on the minibus straight back to London.
Now, let's be fair, we do have a little hospitality after this, but it's not a knees up. So, Paul, I agree with your challenge. And you have 8 seconds on having a knees up starting now.
One way of testing how well your body's working is to go to the doctor and ask him to apply a simple measure of medicine to the part of your...
Paul Paul Martin speaking. As a whistle win, gained that extra point, and he's now equal with Jars Brandreth, 1 point behind Clement Freud and 1 point ahead of Tony Hawks. Clement, you wished us to have the knowledge of your statement or not?
No way.
So that's going to be a secret that you're keeping. And but let's carry on with the show. Paul Merton, your turn. The subject is Over the Moon. We go from having our knees up to Over the Moon. Tell us something about the subject in this game, starting now.
It was a phrase that was very popular with professional footballers in the 1970s. When all they asked after a game, how do you feel? They'd say, over the moon or sick as a parrot, Brian. It seemed to be those were the two common things that these professional athletes were able to utter. I think that over the moon is a marvellous expression because it just pictures how high and happy your emotions are. You soar in the sky, borne aloft on an emotion of love. As I look at Clement...
No, Tony Challenge.
Is there a repetition of emotion?
No, emotions and emotion.
Ah, right.
There's that noise again.
He's played the game a lot, so I have to listen for these things. It's a Devonian moon.
Is it?
You only hear it in Exeter and places like that.
It's very,
very reassuring. But an incorrect challenge, Paul. 36 seconds. Over the moon, starting now.
Georges Méliès was a French cinematographer in the early stages of the 19th century. Well, that's not true. It was the 20th century.
Clement Challenge.
Deviation.
Wait, both deviations.
There were no cinematographers in the early part of the 19th century.
No, that's true. So 30 seconds, Clement. Over the moon, starting now.
I was over the moon.
The Paul Challenge.
Well, I mean, there was enough gap there for a personal statement. I mean, it was just...
Clement, I'm afraid there was... I think you better get this statement ready, because then you can use it.
I'm dying to know what it is.
What is that? Well, and you'll have to tempt him. You're sitting close to him.
Okay.
28 seconds. I don't mean tempt him in that way. I mean just... tease it out of him, is
okay,
what I should
I will,
say.
I will.
Over the moon, Paul, 28 seconds, starting now.
What's your personal statement, Clement?
Clement Challenge.
Deviation.
Deviation. So, deviation on what grounds?
Nothing to do with over the moon.
I know, but he only said three words.
They were devious words.
He might have been going on to justify there's something to do with over the moon. I think he's allowed to get started. I really do. 3 seconds, three words is really not... fair. 27 seconds, Paul. Over the moon, starting now.
It was one of the first films that used stop-motion photography, and the aforementioned man I mentioned earlier...
Aforementioned man I mentioned earlier.
Isn't aforementioned one word and mentioned another?
No. Aforementioned.
Giles, you have over the moon, you have 21 seconds, starting now.
Hey, diddle riddle, the cat and the fiddle, the cow jumped over the moon, the little dog laughed to see such fun.
Tony Challenge.
Well, it's actually not hey diddle riddle, it's hey diddle diddle.
The whole point of this is we're leading up to the fact this is a very dysfunctional family. Bedwetting was an essential part of the problem. Hey diddle riddle. I was coming to that.
All right, Tony, benefit of the doubt, deviation from the words that was to mean understand them and know them. 16 seconds, over the moon, Tony, starting now.
I was over the moon to be invited on this show down to Exeter because I love to grovel to the people down in this area.
Paul Challenge.
Two downs.
Two downs, you were coming down too often.
Yes.
And there are 9 seconds, Paul, over the moon, starting now.
There's a very funny joke which concerns Neil Armstrong. He was on the moon relating these messages back to the Space Exploration Center in Houston.
And Paul Merton speaking as the whistle went, gained the extra point. He's now taking the lead ahead of the other three, who are almost equal in second place. Tony, take the next round, please. Oh, a lovely Devonian subject. Clotted cream. Ooh. They're showing their girth in the audience, all right. Talk on the subject, if you can, Tony. 60 seconds, starting now.
If I was offered the choice of a knees-up with Angelina Jolie or Keira Knightley or a lovely clotted cream tea down here, perhaps in Newton Abbott, of course, I would pick the former. I'm not an idiot. But I would enjoy the clotted cream tea because it is delicious. The scones are a lovely mixture of biscuit and cake on a plate. Never toasted. That would be foolish. The cream is...
Jar's challenge.
I think is a kind of hesitation.
It isn't a hesitation, yes. Mm-hmm. It was a bit sharp, but it was true. He did say So, right, Jar's, you have clotted cream. You have 35 seconds starting now.
In my fantasy life, I am a pupil at Greyfriars School, created by the great Frank Richards, where William George Bunter loves clotted cream teas. Yaroo! Oh, crikey, he says, as the hamper arrives, oozing with jam and butter and clotted creams. Mr. Quelch comes in and tries to take these succulent, moist products from the boy. There is a kind of violent altercation when the master, swishing his cane, descends upon the child and grabs from his lips the very crumbs, covered as they are with gooseberry, raspberry, strawberry, and every other kind of unctuous ointment, all the thrill.
Excellent round of applause, because Giles was going with such animation and histrionics that it was absolutely overwhelming. We were frightened, actually, weren't we?
The St. John's ambulance people are standing by outside.
Absolutely. But he was speaking when the whistle went, gained that extra point. And what is the situation? At the end of the round, I'll let those know, because some people love to hear about the score and the points. Giles has moved forward. He's now in second place, behind Paul Merton, one ahead of Clement Freud and three ahead of Tony Hawks. And Giles, it's also your turn to begin. Tommy Cooper. Tell us something about Tommy Cooper in this game, starting now.
Tommy Cooper once said to me, "Don't worry if your job is small and your rewards are few. Remember that the mighty oak was once a nut like you." This was not the Tommy Cooper of television fame, but a boy in my class, also called Tommy Cooper, who had an obsession with his namesake. Indeed, the child I knew went around wearing a fez instead of his school cap. And when the Latin master, Mr. Stock, said to him, "Repeat a mo, a mas, a mat, a mamas, a martis, a mant," the boy said, just like that.
Yes. There was a hesitation there.
No, that was part of the impression. I know, not a very good impression.
You did say,
just like that. Just like that. Just like that. Just like that.
I think they're struggling out a bit now. I must say, you do go at paces, so your ers are shorter than other people's ers. But I think Paul got in just on the ear. So, Paul, 33 seconds. Tommy Cooper starting now.
I remember seeing Tommy Cooper's last live performance.
Clement challenge.
That was a hesitation.
Yes, it was, Clement. So you tell us something about Tommy Cooper, 30 seconds starting now.
Tommy Cooper was a tremendous Exeter City fan when he was in the Third Division South. St. James's Park was a place Tommy Cooper never failed to visit. He had clotted cream teas, and there was no question at that time of the club being in the conference of Uri Geller or Michael Jackson.
Giles, you challenge.
I felt there was a kind of
there
hesitation.
Was. I was sharp with you on the other one, on the hesitation. Gave it against you. I give it to you this time. 13 seconds, Tommy Cooper. Back with you, Giles, starting now.
Tommy Cooper came from this part of the world, which explains why he was such a remarkable person. Though originally born in Wales, his parents migrated to the Grockle country, where the great man, such an artist...
A Clement challenge.
Two greats.
You had a great man before.
I did.
You did indeed.
I did. So great was his
greatness. Well, listen, Clement, you've got it with 2 seconds to go.
Oh.
Ooh, on Tommy Cooper starting now.
He was very fond of fish and chips.
So Clement was speaking as the whistle went, gained that extra point. He's moved forward. I've heard we have only time for one more round. But as we go into the final round... I'm sure you'd like to know what the situation is, because it's very even. Paul Merton's just in the lead, one ahead of Clement Freud, and he's one ahead of Giles Brandreth, who's 2 or 3 ahead of Tony Hawks. So that is a sequence as we begin the last round with Clement Freud, and it is how to eat an oyster. 60 seconds as usual, Clement, starting now.
The answer is simply with enjoyment. Don't listen to people who say you should swallow it, because that is total nonsense. It's like in one gulp taking a sausage, saying there's no other way to eat it. Oysters are absolutely delicious if you are of the...
Tony challenge.
I don't know, actually. I think I withdraw. I thought he was hesitating, but I don't think he did, actually.
Well, he was teaching on a hesitation.
Do you think so?
But I've given the benefit of the doubt against him on a number of occasions. He has the benefit of the doubt on this occasion. 42 seconds. Carry on, Clement. How to eat an oyster, starting now.
Given the benefit of the doubt, you should eat 2 oysters, maybe 3 or 4. As I said, they are, I think, wonderful seafood, which you should never reject if given to you. Don't believe for 1 second... They have any...
Tony challenge.
He said believe in the first time.
Yes, you were about believing, yes, about...
Believing, yes.
Yes.
So believe.
Hmm?
Though I think you did say
Clement, you're muttering then again.
No, I was correcting you, but it seems pointless.
Clement, it's never pointless. I hate anybody to feel they
have... Okay, give me a point.
I give you the benefit of the doubt. I've given it to Clement. I give it to you now. How to Eat an Oyster, Tony, starting now.
I used to go to How to Eat an Oyster.
Hesitation and deviation of the English language and
which one do you want?
Vowels. I'd like all three in different ways, but certainly hesitation. He stumbled over it, and that forced a hesitation upon him. There was deviation of the English language in the way that flowering.
I can't
is
give
not
you three
happens.
Points, John.
No, I just
I give
like
you
one
point.
No. 1 point. I'm grateful for that.
25 seconds. How to eat an oyster, starting now.
Than an oyster, there's nothing moister or more confusing, because these creatures are neutral in terms of gender. You don't know whether you are consuming a male one or a female one or one. That
and
is...
Clement
oh,
challenge.
One.
Too many
ones.
Three
yes.
ones. Yes.
So you got back in, Clement,
but
13 seconds.
Right.
How to eat an oyster, starting now.
Ideally on a bed of spinach with a hollandaise sauce made of egg yolk, butter, juice, salt, malted white peppercorns, and a sharp knife.
Clement Freud was then speaking as the whistle went and gained that extra point. And the final situation is that Tony Hawks came only just in fourth place, but did extraordinarily well. Ah. Oh. Now, his contribution was lovely, as always.
Housewife's favourite, I mean.
Yes. Giles Brandreth, great contribution, but finishing in third place. 1 point behind Paul Merton. But Paul was 2 points behind Clement Freud. So we say, this week, Clement, you are our winner. To say thank you to these four delightful players of the game, Paul Merton, Clement Freud, Giles Brandreth, and Tony Hawks. I also thank Janet Staplehurst, who's helped me with the score and blown her whistle so delicately after the 60 seconds. We thank our producer-director, Claire Jones. We're indebted to Ian Messiter, who created this game, and we're grateful to this lovely audience, this Devonian audience here in the Norco Theatre in Exeter, who've cheered us on our way. Thank you from the audience. Thank you from me, Nicholas Parsons, and from our panel. Tune in again the next time we play Just a Minute.
Next week, Just a Minute comes from the Shaw Theatre in London, where Nicholas Parsons will be joined by Paul Merton, Lisa Tarbuck, Kit Hesketh-Harvey, and Chris Neal.